Session number 26579.
Mr. Clark, Reel 18. You're telling me about the quality of recruits and the question of the Hamilton and Glasgow offices, different approaches to getting them in for the Cameroon. Yeah, if you carry on with that, yeah.
Yep. Well, as I say, just to sum up about that, it caused a little feeling at the time, in actual fact. I certainly was upset about the whole issue, but it managed to sort itself out. The big bonus for me getting this job in Hamilton was that I had this transport on my lovely Land Rover, and also I managed to get my wife up to from Newcastle, and we got lovely married quarters.
Tell me about the married quarters. What were they like? Because we haven't talked about that one.
Very good, because the thing was that Winston Barracks. Just before the war started, there was two barracks built, one in Ayrshire and in Ayr, called Churchill Barracks. And the ones at Lanark were called Winston Barracks, obviously in memory of the great man. The barracks in Lanark were excellent, were absolutely first class, were right up to date for that time, for that period. The barrack rooms were really comfortable, with a beautiful big gymnasium. The dining hall was beautiful.
Now what about the married quarters, though? Tell me about
married
that.
Quarters were very good. The married quarter we had was in excellent condition. Now, what you've got to bear in mind, that when you take over a married quarter, you take it over from another human being. Now, sometimes people are not so fortunate as I was. I took over from a cook sergeant who had no family, and he was posted out, and I took over this quarter, and it was absolutely immaculate. Brilliant. It was as you would, indoor, living room, dining room combined, upstairs, two bedrooms. And the back bedroom had a beautiful view of the Lanark. It was where we were, it was quite a rural area. Right, about 5 miles outside Lanark, out in the countryside, and we had a lovely view from our back bedroom. And so we had no in the kitchen, for then, modern convenience. And my wife, she was absolutely in love with it. She loved it, she did, you know. Plus the fact we had a terrific sergeant's mess, and the RSM we had at the time, RSM Tommy Williams, DCM, he was a great boy for running a good social life in the mess, organising social life.
So what sort of social life would you have in the side? Tell us about it.
Well, for example, Friday night would be a tombola night where all the married families get in there, and we had quite a lot of people come up from Lanark, men and women come up from Lanark, friends of the regiment, and you'd find it on a Friday night the mess would be packed, like, you know. And Saturday night would be a social evening. It'd be a dance night with a 3 or 4 piece band in. A dance come buffy. Then Sunday night again, we would have another social night with tombola and a bit of a sing song. Once again, with a couple of somebody maybe with an accordion. But the fact was that it was in a rural location. This really helped. The RSM had it really well organised for us, you know. So the boredom didn't really set in, like, you know. And my wife and I, we thoroughly enjoyed it. We didn't go out a lot, but we used to enjoy our nights in the mess. The odd night we would go into Lanark, say maybe on a Saturday night, and have a meal, or even maybe a Wednesday night. There's a lovely hotel there, the Caledonia Hotel. We'd go in there and have a meal. And that would be the icing on the cake. And all too soon, the job at Lanark came to an end.
Well, 2 years.
Two years.
So that was till May, about May 50.
Yeah.
60.
Yeah, we now come into May 60. So, having started off the recruiting job, not a very happy frame of mind, I finished up regretting having to leave it. However, my next move was the 1st Battalion was forming in Edinburgh, ready to go to Germany. my wife went back home to live with her parents, and I joined the battalion in Edinburgh. Well, in Glencoe's barracks, actually, just outside Edinburgh. I was posted to C Company, and the command, by this time, Colonel Harper, Major Harper, had been promoted and become Colonel Harper, Lieutenant Colonel Harper, and was commanding officer of the battalion. I then went to C Company, and under a tremendous chap, Major Mackay, I think I mentioned him before, Big Shugles Mackay, terrific bloke. And my company sergeant major was an old friend of mine, very old friend of mine, he and I had joined the army practically at the same time. And the setup in the company was pretty good. It was quite good. Now we, at that stage, it was about June when we arrived there, and then a few weeks after that, my wife arrived, and once again we got a lovely married quarter. Absolutely immaculate, the married quarter was. But what happened was that normally the battalion, that we arrived there at more or less at the height of the training season, where the whole division or brigades would go to Soltau, northern Germany, plains of Soltau, which was a huge big training area, which also in pre-war and during the war had been used by the Wehrmacht. Now, when we arrived there, the whole division had gone up to Soltau. So what they did was they sent us to a place called Sennelager, just about 20 or 30 miles south of Minden. Now, Sennelager was used as a warming up a place prior to going to Soltau. And it was just basic company training, company tactics, radio tactics. And by this time, incidentally, by this time, soldiers, the average soldier, no longer had to follow the leader, as it were. Every soldier had to be taught how to operate a 26 set radio set. Every soldier had to be taught how to map read to a pretty high degree. This had never happened before, simply because that the army was starting to change then. We were getting off our feet and getting onto transport, onto armoured personnel carriers, which meant that you were doing quick attacks and or moving from point A to point B pretty rapidly.
Now tell me about the training in wireless then. Well, you'd have to do it as well, obviously.
Sorry?
You'd have to do it as well.
Exactly. Well, we get taught by a signal sergeant come along and would take the sergeants and the corporals in the company. And it was based on a terrific setup, a platoon setup. And as far as I can recall, my platoon setup was my call sign was 26-26. And 26 Alpha, Bravo, Charlie, that was the three sections. So if I wanted to call up one of my sections, I'd say 26 for 26 Alpha, message over, that type of thing. Now, I'd never done this before, but once again, I got very enthusiastic about radio work, really enjoyed it. So it was all to do with communication.
Now, these sets, the 26 set,
26 sets,
were they in the vehicles?
No, they were in the vehicles, but also when you debussed, you took the set with you.
And can you tell us a bit about the set? What was it like?
They were in the kind of greenish, they were small sets, not very big. And they were in a canvas pouch, with straps on it that you could attach to your body. And then you had your headset plugged in, you had your headsets plugged in, and you could communicate with the company commander in any of your sections, or even any other platoons, as long as you gave the right call sign to attract them. That was fine, like, no? Then the next thing was...
Hang on. What about the map training? Tell me about the map training.
Map training. That wasn't so easy for some of the guys to pick up. I wasn't too bad. I could.
Now what were you learning? Tell me what you were learning.
Learning how to give a six good reference, map reference. How to use a compass. How to get a back bearing on a compass. Things like that. It was just very basic stuff. If you were interested in map reading, you know, some people weren't all that bothered about map reading, but at the end of the day, it could save your life. And it was just being able to read a map with all the signs that the what do they call them again? Every map had symbols on it, which they told you, which gave you, put you in a picture. You know, you could say a windmill, for example. You'd see a little figure, tiny figure, shaped like a windmill. And they...
What about contours? We're getting used
contours, to... Contours, you'd learn about contours so that you could get the height of the ground. The closer the contours were, the higher the ground, the steeper the ground was. And the wider the contour lines were, the lower the ground was, you know.
Now, what about these vehicles you were getting? Tell me about them.
The APCs.
APCs, Armoured Personnel
Carriers.
And which type were they?
I can't remember offhand the type they were.
Well, tell me what they were like then.
They were very, very heavy and cumbersome, being made of steel. In the summer, they were very, very warm. In the winter, they were just like ice boxes. Absolutely ice boxes. Now, carried a platoon commander, or a platoon commander who normally had his head stuck out the front, the passenger, standing in the passenger seat, and his head stuck out the top. Inside, you had a section commander, or you'd have a platoon sergeant in the platoon vehicle, and your wireless operator, your runner, what have you. Then the sections would have a section commander with about 8 or 9 chaps in the vehicle with all their weapons, radios and everything. Now then.
Now, did everybody have a place in... I mean, were they all in armoured personnel carriers or just some of them?
Well, they were all armoured. You know, you'd have probably...
You were motorised, in other words. You were motorised, fully motorised.
Oh, yeah, fully motorised. The guys who drove them were MT chaps who were trained to drive these vehicles. And they knew the drill as well, that if you went in to do an attack, you only went to a certain length, obviously, and then you had to dismount. And as soon as you dismounted to start forming up, the vehicles would reverse. They were trained to reverse. And then they would get into position where they would camouflage up straight away. The drivers automatically camouflaged the vehicles. So that when they were called up again, once the attack was finished, you'd gone through and consolidated, then you called up and the vehicles would come up and... You know, they were very, very. There was nothing elaborate about these vehicles inside. They were very, very uncomfortable. That's the only word I can describe them. But they served a purpose. You didn't really travel any great long distance at that stage. Then in them, they were just mainly for sort of local company and platoon attacks. So that was we learned that. All these things done in Sernlager.
And this was June?
June, yeah. By the way, the word I was looking for earlier on for these things in the map was conventional signs. That's what we call them. And they could tell you quite a lot about the terrain that you were actually in or going into.
Was there anything else about these exercises at Sernlager?
Yeah, we then had to do quite a bit of range work. And once again, as I said earlier on, the army was much moving forward, technically. And the ranges we had at Sernlager, it was absolutely, we'd never seen anything like this in our life before. There was firepoint instructors, but there was no butts. The targets were all there, but there was no butts, and there was no men marking on the butts. What would happen is this, the men would get down and start firing. And they weren't the big conventional square targets. They were the human-shaped targets, like, you know. And behind the firing point was this building. And behind each, in this building, corresponding with the target, were little sort of clock thing. And when the guy fired, it would register on the dunes, like, you know, what if he had hit the target. It was basically hit or miss. There was no bull in a magpie out. It was, you either hit the target or you missed it. Anyway, after the first day, I thought there's something not right here, because I knew there was men in my platoon who could hardly hit a barn door. They weren't very good shots, and yet they were coming up with the excellent results. So, just over a week after we'd started firing, the company commander had a session about this. And he said, "What do you reckon?" He was asking. I said, "Sir," I said, there's a flaw in the setup." I said, "There are guys here in my platoon," I said, "no doubt in other platoons, but not very good shots, but they're getting excellent, registering excellent results here." And what we discovered was, and I was quite right, I said this, I said, "I believe that the bullets, a near miss on the edge of a target, is registering as a hit. It's not synchronized properly." And they got the Remy guys up and they tested it and they discovered that this was happening, like, you know. So what they did was they suspended the firing for a few days for the Remy chaps to rectify this fault. And after that, it was as right as rain, you know. I think, if my memory serves me right, I think we were the first troops to use this new system, like, you know.
Was it better?
From the point of view that you didn't need your guys up in the butts freezing their butts off, pardon the pun, that was good in that respect. And then it started to give true results. It started to give misses and what have you. And a man would get a true result of his day's firing. No?
It's still the SLR rifle, was it?
We were on an SLR rifle by this time. Then, when we finished it, we were doing it in St. Lager for about a month. And then we came back. And then, when we got back to Minden, it was just normal.
Now, where were you at Minden? What barracks were you in at Minden?
We were in the Elizabeth Barracks in Minden, on the outskirts of Minden, going towards Hanover. And in that brigade, we had the South Wales Borderers, who were stationed at the other end of the town, and we had the Middlesex Regiment. They were stationed in the town of Pied Piper Town.
Hamlin.
They were stationed a few miles away in Hamlin.
Now, what was life like then at Minden?
Life was pretty good, actually. It was, as I say, we were in a lovely married quarter.
You had good married quarters there?
Oh, yeah, beautiful married quarters. We had a lovely married quarter. And where we were lucky. Across the road, it was all civilian, German civilian houses. And just up, about 5 minutes walk up the road, was the most beautiful little pub that very few army types get into. So my wife and I used to get in there.
Were they as good as the married quarters you'd had when you were at Hamilton, you know?
Oh, even better. They were actually, because they were more modern, in actual fact.
Even more?
They'd been built after the war. 2 or 3 years after the war, they were comparatively new.
And what was your sort of daily routine of life like?
Up in the morning, inspect the barrack rooms, check the barrack rooms, get the men stand by their beds, make sure everything was on the ball. Then muster parade, which was normally the company commander would come on parade and he would choose a platoon at random. And then your platoon commander would inspect the platoon. Now, I was very, very fortunate in as much that the platoon commander I had was a fantastic bloke, a bloke called David Ashley.
I'll come back to him. Carry on with the rest of the day.
Yeah. Yeah, the routine was then maybe drill. Sergeant Major or the platoon sergeant would take an hour's drill. Then weapon training, and then in the afternoon it would be recreation. Most afternoons were recreation, hockey, basketball or football. And it was a pretty mundane routine. Route marches, we'd get a few route marches marching out towards Hamlin, because it was quite a rural area out that way. So we weren't bothered all that much by traffic.
Tell me about this, was it Second Lieutenant David Ashley or Lieutenant?
No, Lieutenant.
What was he like? He
was a fantastic bloke. His father had been a colonel in the regiment that went during the war. And David started off his career in the para regiment as a National Service Officer. And when he left the parachute regiment, he was a qualified pilot in actual fact, flying light aircraft. And when he left the army, after his National Service, he did the crop spraying, flying these light aircraft, spraying the crops. And there was three of them were good friends were doing this. But here, the other two flew in and were killed. So David actually realised, he said, see what was happening, we were making quite a lot of money. We got up to London at the weekend and blowing it. And going back on into the aircraft Monday morning, thick heads and all sorts. So he decided it was getting too risky. So he rejoined the army, but rejoined his dad's regiment. Now, he and I, now once again, I took over a platoon that was absolute rubbish. After the second day, he said, because he had just, this was his first platoon and my first platoon in the battalion. And he said to me, what do you reckon? I said, we've got a right share here.
Now, what was rubbish about them?
The platoon sergeant prior to that had just let things go. He wasn't interested in discipline. And his second lieutenant was just the same. As a consequence, when we got there, it was so easy-ozy. Their turnout was bad. Their attitude was bad. It was just similar to the one that I took over in Korea, kind of thing. Through lack of platoon discipline. So David and I had a chat about it. We said, right, we'll go to town on it. So we did do. Started charging blokes, putting blokes in the guard room. And a lovely thing happened just shortly after that. At that time, it was very difficult to get kicked out of the army, to get sacked from the army. And somewhere along the line, some common sense prevailed, and someone realised that this had to stop. So they brought out an order where soldiers could be sacked. They were warned, just like today, they could be given a warning. So when this happened, we started to implement this. They would warn the guys, say, look, you know, you're... And at first, they were treating it with a bit of scepticism, thinking, oh, we're bluffing. Anyway, we went and seen the company commander, seen Colonel Mackay, and said, hey, Major Mackay. And we said, look, we've got this. Mackay knew we had this duck platoon. So he said, can we start sacking them? Yeah, by all means, he said. Do the business. And within the space of 2 months, we'd sacked about six or seven. Got rid of them.
Right out of the army.
Right out of the army. Kicked right out. And the transformation was fantastic. The transformation was unbelievable. They got down to it, started soldiering, and earning their pay. The other thing I was very keen on was that in those days, the pay system I thought was very good, was very fair. It was on a star system.
Tell me about it.
A soldier you'd 1 to 3 stars. And usually when you pass your recruit training, then you became a 1-star soldier. Now that, nobody would take that away from you. But you then had to become proficient in weapon training, map reading, radio, to get right up to the 3 stars. And as you progressed, the higher your pay went. The only way that you could lose your stars is if you let things go and got very slack in your attitude and your standard dropped, then you could lose your pay. But in the main, men strive to keep the higher pay, like, you know. I mean, it wasn't a lot in today's money, but in those days it was something worth working for. So that was a great system that was introduced just around about the same time as sacking people. And that the two things combined the standard, the battalion rose perceptibly, like, you know. So there we were. We finished at Senelager.
There we go. We
and then we went more or less went into winter mode, which was cleaning weapons, kit inspections. You know, company command member kit inspections, say on a Saturday morning. RSM's drill parades, CO's drill parades, Saturday morning. And all in all, it was just more what they call interior economy, preparing the battalion ready for the next. Went to the next season's training, which once again started at Senlager. But then also you'd find that the social life became quite good as well within the battalion.
In the winter?
In the winter time, yeah.
Tell us about that. Tell us.
We had a terrific band, military band, commanded by a wonderful guy called Bud Quinn, Bandmaster Quinn. Now, in that band, he had five or six blokes who were tremendous musicians, swing band musicians, you know, led by a bloke called Jackie, the band sergeant. Jackie was a great, he loved the jazz, traditional jazz. My wife and I nicknamed them Trad Jazz. But on a Saturday night in the mess, you would have the band there, about five-piece band. Beautiful buffet. You know, you could either have a curry buffet, or you could have egg, beans, and fried bread, and things like that. You know? But it wasn't only peculiar to our mess. The brigade was a good brigade we were in. I think it was 11 Brigade. Yeah, 11 Brigade we were in. And brigade headquarters had a smashing mess up at the other end of the town. The South Wales borders had a smashing mess. So what my wife and I used to do, we'd travel around the messes. We'd give Saturday night each, because we made a lot of friends in other regiments, like, you know. The RSM of the South Wales Borderers, he was a wonderful chap, a little Irish fella. In fact, there's hardly any Welshmen in the sergeant's mess. They're all either Cockneys or Irishmen. But, as I say, the social life was terrific. And then, at a certain time of the year, I forget which, was it May? I think it was in May. We had what we called the Neuve Chapelle Ball, Cameroonians. This was to celebrate the Battle of Neuve Chapelle.
Now, tell me about the Neuve Chapelle Ball.
Now, what would happen, in Minden, for example, we'd have the gym all done out, decorated, furniture all put in there, and all the regimental silver from the officer's mess and the sergeant's mess was displayed there. And you have the usual top table with the colonel and visitors. You know, maybe the brigade commander would be a guest. You know, the top table with all the top brass there. And a wonderful buffet was produced. Massive big buffet. And then it was just a lovely ball. You know, there was all sorts of different dancing all night. Till maybe about 1 or 2 in the morning. And that was held. In fact, that was even held at Lanark as well, in the regimental depot. It was a great regimental occasion. But we got slaughtered at Neuve Chapelle, But we used to celebrate it in true British tradition, like, you know, always celebrate the defeats. And we were no exception.